Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help you win at the game of business and marketing so you thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. Please be sure to check out our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com, where you can see our entire collection of topics and interviews covering a breadth and depth of items relevant to business creators just like you. Also, be sure to sign up on your favorite syndication network to get timely updates about new content. You can find us on places like iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Blog Talk Radio, and other networks. So today we are going to have a lot of fun. We have a gentleman who's actually been on the Business Creators Radio Show a couple times. He's always great with incredible information. Our listeners like you love him. And I know we've gotten a lot of new people who have been following the Business Creators Radio Show over the past year. And once again, I want to welcome you. And that's why I'm going to take a moment just to introduce our guest today, Jan Vespasian. He is awesome. He's a good friend of mine. And here is what you are going to like about him. Let me just tell you a little bit about him. He's the author of 10 books about rational living, including When Everything Fails, Try This, Rationality is the Way to Happiness, The Philosophy of Builders, The 10 Principles of Rational Living, Rational Living, Rational Working, Consistency, The Key to Permanent Stress Release, On Becoming Unbreakable, Thriving in Difficult Times. And this is one of the interviews, Sequentiality, the Amazing Power of Finding the Right Sequence of Steps. And now he has come out with a new book called Undisrupted, How Highly Effective People Deal with Disruptions. This topic is so near and dear to my heart. It is one of the pillars of the spring formula that I cover inside my book, which is Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy, which came out February 2nd, 2018. We deal a lot with disruptions and some of the science behind how disruptions are more than they appear to be on the surface. Like, for instance, you're doing some work and your phone rings and it's an unscheduled call and you say, I'll just grab this call real quick. And even if it's a 2-minute call, you've easily lost a half hour of your day just because of some of the issues that go into disruptions. And that's one of the reasons that I find this topic so important and why I think it's very important for you to be able to protect yourself from disruptions and deal with them effectively. And as you've seen, Jan has a significant background when it comes to these sorts of issues, dealing with rationality, sequentiality, and how to handle life. And he has got a wealth of information for you today. But what I'd like to do first is, first of all, Jan, come on in. The weather's fine. Welcome aboard.
Hello, Adam. Thanks for having me on.
As always. And what I'd like to do is, I think we did this about a year ago, but let's do it again just for our many new listeners, is I read off your bio and your impressive bibliography. And what I'd like to do now is just take a moment. Let's hear a little bit about you personally and a little bit about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Yes, I have a commercial background, and I started to write books about 10 years ago out of sheer frustration because I couldn't find practical information about personal development, personal finance, marketing. So what I have done during the last 10 years is to go through really hundreds of different stories, biographies, real events from history, from different centuries, trying to extract practical principles that people can use today in the 21st century in our own lives and in our own business. So the books are very practically oriented, but all the stories in the books are 100% real people. And what I try to do is to use very, very short stories to go to through the life of a person, within a couple of pages to go to the essential point so that we can draw the essential lesson. So what I have done in the books already 14 years is to try to condense the wisdom of previous centuries.
Absolutely. And since we're dealing with being undisrupted today, let's really just kind of start by defining what some of the strategies are. So what is the key in your vision to dealing effectively with disruptions? And actually, before we do that, I'd like to take a step back and just make sure that we understand something very clearly as well. Disruptions can mean all sorts of things. I gave the example of you stop to take a phone call or something unexpected comes up that turns your straight line into sort of a squiggly line to get to the end. So how do you define the term disruption?
Well, disruption is a major problem. It's not just, I mean, just something that, okay, you run out of sugar and you cannot have a cup of coffee. I'm talking about events that really make people fall apart, that disrupt businesses, severe problems with health, bankruptcy. I mean, I'm talking about really serious problems.
Right.
And I'm presented in this book strategies, very practical strategies, how to prevent disruptions, how to minimize disruptions, and how to deal with situations that are really catastrophic.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you, actually, if I run out of stevia for my iced tea, that is a disruption because I cannot drink unsweetened tea. It just doesn't happen. I'm sorry. So to me, that's a disruption. So I need to think ahead to make sure that I always have plenty of stevia and that I don't wait until the container is almost empty before I go buy more. Or we're going to have a little bit of a problem up here. So that's just, you know, to me, that is a disruption, but that's just a little personal aside. But I understand your point that disruptions, aside from the fact that they can be very major and very transformational, and many cases a bad way, as you've described, there are also things we can't really anticipate or predict in many cases. So what to you is the key to dealing effectively when it comes to disruptions that emerge?
Well, there are different principles, but if I have to give just one principle, the main idea in the book is that when you're dealing with disruptions, you have to face them from your strengths. The worst thing you can do is to improvise. When you are having problems with your relationship, your job, your finances, you should not just go and do something completely different from what you have been doing all your life. You should not just start a business you know nothing about. You have to make a list of your assets and try to build on those. I've been in this book through hundreds of different stories when I was doing research. There was no one exception. There was, I would say, absolutely zero exceptions. Everybody who went through through major disruptions and who came on a very high position on the other side, everybody went fighting from a position of strength. People right. retreat, they make a list of their assets, and they base their defenses on those.
Right. Yeah, and I think that you raise a very important thing. It's one thing to keep moving forward, but there is an importance and a value that comes from knowing when to, you can use the word retreat, you can use the word regroup, but it's just the idea of being able to take that time out. And you know, it's kind of funny is even as I'm conducting this interview, I'm scanning through a couple things on this end because sometimes our guests like you will prompt me to say, hey, you know, that sounds familiar. Let me look something up real quick. Or I may just happen to realize I didn't close my email. And I'm reading an email from somebody that they sent just the other day, actually, and they own a technology company, and they were sending this to all their subscribers because apparently their technology failed the other day, and like their whole system was down for a whole day. And I mean, if you're selling a software system and you have to have uptime on your servers, but then your servers crash, that's a pretty big disruption. Because sometimes one day is all it takes for somebody to say, you know what, I've been meaning to cancel this for a while. I'll just do it today since I'm not seeing the benefits immediately. Or, oh my goodness gracious, my business depends so much on this other person's software that, oh, I'm dead in the water. So you know what, to heck with them, I'm going to find me another software. And then you end up losing customers over that too.
That's a perfectly valid comment. One of the strategies that has been proven through history is that when you have critical systems or critical lifelines, we could be for your health, you have to diversify the sources. You cannot just rely on one server. You cannot rely on one technology. It is too dangerous. And one of the stories I present in the book to really drive this point home is the story of Robert Stephenson, who was an entrepreneur in the 19th century. He was a financier working in railroads. And Stephenson went bankrupt when he was in his 30s, early 40s, because he made a huge mistake. He created a company to build the railroad. And instead of building the railroad with a limited liability company, he created a partnership because he was very inexperienced in legal matters. And then he realized at a certain point that he had to pay all the debt of the railroad with his own personal assets. So the guy was almost desperate for a couple of years. Eventually, he learned the lesson. And in the future, he became super, super prudent, and he diversified everything. He was the master of diversification of risk. He always protected himself. And when he built a new business, the first thing he did was to incorporate the company to separate from his personal assets. And when he shopped for suppliers, he always got two quotations for the same subject. And this made him a very successful entrepreneur, because he knew that when one source failed, he could always go back to the second one. He did this for years, actually for almost 40 years. He became one of the most successful railways entrepreneurs in the 19th century, because he was always covering the downside.
Right. And, you know, another way I look at this is I see, and I've had people come to me, especially back in the day when I used to have a web design and digital marketing firm. This is going back several years. And as soon as I saw an inquiry come in, somebody who was interested in working with us, and they said, you know, I'm really just looking for a one-stop shop where I can get everything, I'd say, whoa, 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 stop right there. Do you recognize how you could be putting your business in a world of hurt? And I have had this debate with people who own digital marketing companies, for example, and they say, we are a one-stop shop. Actually, if you have a conversation with them and you explain to them your precise vision for what you want them to do and what you want your business to be and how you want your business to benefit from working with them, you will probably quickly find out they're actually not a one-stop shop. They may be able to technically do pretty much anything you want them to do, whether it's something they already offer or something that they can create, but is it really their intersection of their brilliance and passion? And if it's not, is that really going to be the best investment for you? And is it really the best investment for them to do something that is not really at the center of what they feel is important? So you find out pretty quickly there's really no such thing as a one-stop shop. So I've also taken flack by going into mastermind groups and discussion forums and saying, look, if you have one person you've hired to do your email marketing, you actually need to have two people who can do your email marketing, even if one person's normally doing it, because there comes a time that person goes on vacation. There comes a time that person goes sick. What if that one person decides they don't want to do it anymore? What if you have a falling out with that person that you can't anticipate right now? What if there's a conflict of interest that emerges on their end and they need to stop working with you due to some larger opportunity that came along? There are 100 different ways that saying you need to be you need to have that indispensable person. You need to be that indispensable person is a wrong thing. You got to have, in my opinion, replication and redundancy. There's a saying, I believe it's in the Navy SEALs, although I could be mistaken, but I know it's a military thing. And the saying goes as follows: one is none and two is one.
Oh, that is very profound, I have to say. In history, you learn that human beings, we tend to be very linear in our thinking. And when I went through a lot of bankruptcy stories in this book, seeing how people actually destroy their lives because they become super optimistic, they become super linear, they think that it's almost impossible to fail, it's always the same logic. It's the logic that I have this system, it has been working for 40 years, I never had a problem, why should I care about risk? And you see one story after the other, people losing their houses, losing their businesses, losing their families, just because they think that they are so successful that nothing can happen to them. And there seems to be something inside our brains that prevents us from thinking laterally. And this is why to be prudent is the best way to prevent disruptions. Otherwise, it can catch you when you're thinking of something else, and you just turn around and realize that you lost everything.
Yeah. And one thing I've noticed with you, and I think it's the third time we've had you on the show, if I remember correctly, is you, in your work, you spend a lot of time studying history. And that's one of the things that attracts me to what you do, because I myself am an avid student of history. And I love to read biographies because I like to see how people in real situations actually handled it. And they didn't have a textbook. They didn't have a step-by-step, but they were in a situation where they needed to deal with something. And it, some cases, their decision could have a effect on world history that could ripple through for centuries. So I love that you have this historical view on your work. And I know that inside the book, you speak about a few people, and I'm going to ask you a couple questions about a few of those in a few moments. But I just love how you take us back to history, because we recognize that many of these trails have already been blazed.
Yes, and the problem when we study history in school is that it's very boring. And I used to have the same problem because I didn't like history when I was in school. It's just figures and dates, and you have to memorize the names of kings and this kind of stuff, which is completely useless. The point of studying history and learning history is to learn the principles. Otherwise, the stories themselves are useless. You have to really get the lessons. Otherwise, what's the point? Who cares about the Middle Ages? Who cares about ancient Rome and ancient Greece unless you understand the stories? And this is the purpose of my work, to really show how much you can learn from history. It's amazing. Let me just tell you a story about preventing the risk and avoiding disruptions. A story from the Middle Ages. And people, when they think of the Middle Ages, we tend to be very negative because we think, okay, these people were poor, they didn't have technology, they didn't have mobile phones, but they have to face problems that are very complex. And one of the great things to visit when you're in Europe is the cathedrals, the Gothic cathedrals from the Middle Ages. They are very impressive buildings. And people who build these cathedrals, you have to realize, they were very short. The average height of men in the Middle Ages was 5 feet. They were very small people. It was very cold in the winter. It was very difficult to transport materials from one place to the other. And in the end, a few people figure out how to build cathedrals. And the lesson is very important because they have to deal with all these disruptions, with the weather. They have very crappy living conditions. They have problems with crops. And a few people in France, they wanted to introduce these new building techniques. They wanted to build amazing cathedrals, but they have to deal with all these disruptions. And in the end, there was one man, Abbot Suger, who lived next to Paris, who figured out how to put together a project that lasted only 10 years and build an amazing cathedral. He did it in the following way. He made a list of all the problems he had, logistics, transportation of the workers, the problem with seasonality because they couldn't work during the winter because it was too cold. And in the end, Suger put all these problems together on the table, and he figured out a way to work smoothly through the year. So he built houses, wooden houses for the workers, so they could continue to work during the winter, cutting stones for the cathedral. And right. Then in the summer, they put it all together. So he figured out a way to smooth out all the disruptions and to have everybody working together all through the year. And with very limited resources, he managed to build these amazing cathedrals in only 10 years. And this is a key. When you're running a business, when you have disruptions in your own life, you have to put all the problems together in a list, like they did in the Middle Ages. You have to make you have to get visibility of the issues, and then you have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together until you get a smooth solution. And if they could do it in the Middle Ages, it's much easier for us today in the 21st century. But the methodology the methodology is the same. You have to look at all the issues, you have to make a map, and then you have to draw the line of least resistance.
Yeah, and I think that's all very important stuff, and you know, a lot of things we can discover. So when we have times of turmoil, and there could be disruptions coming in place, in light of everything you've said, is it possible for individuals to actually protect themselves?
Yes, it is. It is something that today people tend to be super pessimistic when they listen at the news about the trade disputes between countries, currency problems, and they get the idea that they are too vulnerable and they cannot do anything to protect themselves. But the technology for protection, for self-protection, is always the same in history. You have to diversify your assets. You have to diversify your sources of income. And you have to design your life in a way that is very self-sufficient so that you are not so dependent on medical services, you are not so dependent on a particular source of income, that you can really manage your health and your business in a way that it will continue to work, it will continue to produce positive results, even if you have to deal with major problems. People have been doing this in history during war times, during periods of famine, during floods, and they have found a way to do it. And in my book, I go through the different techniques, how people have done that, but it always comes to taking a step back, to thinking rationally when you are trying to face these major problems. Instead of panicking, you have to draw a map that keeps you safe and allows you to continue to be successful.
Yeah, very true, very true. Now, what's also interesting inside the book that you're sharing with us, the Undisrupted book, that you sometimes encourage your readers to embrace certain types of disruptions. So we're going straight from protecting against disruptions to embracing them. What does that mean, and how do we make that leap?
This is because one of the main problems that you might have in your career or in your business is that you might get stuck. And this is a problem which is, I would say, underappreciated because people are always talking about success, about getting more money, getting more reputation, to have growth. But the number of people that get stuck in their careers or in this business is huge. It's what you call underemployment. It's a situation of stagnation. And I have to say that in history, when you look through the centuries and you look at different examples, everybody who gets stuck, most of the time, the only way to really improve the situation is to go to a certain amount of disruption. And let me just give you an example from history, which is super illustrative. Look, one of the most famous persons in the 1940s, 1950s was Albert Schweitzer. Yeah. He was a physician who went to Africa, and then he started a hospital in Africa. But very few people know that Schweitzer used to be a professor. He used to be a professor in university.
Sure.
He was very unhappy with his job. He wanted to do something to help people. And then eventually he wanted to go to Africa to start a mission, to start a hospital. Now, you cannot imagine a higher or a deeper disruption than that, to really throw away 20 years of your professional life, to go to a different continent, to start from scratch. And Schweitzer did that. But here is the super important story, the super important lesson. Schweitzer covered the downside. And how did he do that? He was a very a passionate musician. He used to play the organ in the cathedral. He used to play music on Saturday and Sunday. And when he went to Africa, he was conscious that he was taking a high risk, that his mission might fail, his hospital might be might run out of money. And in order to maintain his lifeline alive during all these years, because he was there basically with his wife, he didn't have any major resources. What he did was to buy a second-hand piano, and he took it to Africa. And he was in his mission in his hospital in Africa. He would play piano 1 hour per day every day to maintain his musical skills. And once a year, he went back to Europe to give some concerts to raise money for his mission. And he maintained this scheme of funding for decades very successfully. So the lesson is super important. When you are stuck, like Schweitzer was stuck in his job, he didn't like his life, you have to go through a period of disruption. It is inevitable. But if you do it in the clever way, like he did it, you can maintain always your skills, and you can develop those skills. Like Schweitzer, he was playing piano every single day. And you can imagine, I mean, the situation is almost impossible to imagine, that in the middle of the savannah, the guy was surrounded by villages. He was there alone. He would play the piano every afternoon for 1 hour because he knew that this was his insurance. This was his guarantee that even if he lost everything, he could always go back to play music. And this is what kept him very successfully running his mission in Africa for almost 40 years. So the lesson is super important. If you want to run a life which is as smooth as possible, and to be sure that you never get depressed, you never get too anxious, always keep cultivating your skills, your critical skills, your major skills, because they will always secure your future, even during the worst possible periods.
Yeah, and I've shared many times on the Business Creators Radio Show that there was a couple-year period where I'd been in business for a while, and then I looked at it and I said, you know, this is okay from a financial standpoint, but is this really the intersection of my brilliance and my passion? And it took me a while to discover where I really wanted to go and what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I'm delighted that I had the opportunity to go through that process because it was a period of intense discovery. And at the same time, it was a major disruption from the path that had been, you know, candidly drawn for me more than I drew it. What was good about it is because I had been thinking ahead, at least at some level, to what happens if this business goes away or something happens to this business. I had some things in place that allowed me to sustain the revenues and keep the thing going, and in some cases growing, while I put all this stuff together. Now, your book warns against prophets of doom, but is pessimism justified nowadays?
Actually not. The problem is that when we read the newspapers or we listen to the news, we tend to absorb massive amounts of negative, pessimistic information. And this is understandable because the business of news is a business of sensation. They want to keep their audience motivated to watch every day. And you see this now in the international crisis between countries. You see every minute there is a new catastrophe happening or something that's going to happen, and people stay in front of their TVs the whole day. But it's massively exaggerated. We live in a period of economic growth. There are massive opportunities if you really want to develop your business. It's very important to stay away or to limit your exposure to this kind of news, because not because you should not listen to the news, but you should not pay too much attention to exaggerated negative reports. It happens all the time that the news, the media, they take a detail and they extrapolate it into a major trend, and this is very deceptive. You see the economic statistics. The economy keeps growing. In the last 10 years, the stock market is going through new heights almost every day. And you read the newspapers, and it seems that this is the end of the world. So you have to keep a balanced head. Otherwise, you will exaggerate disruptions, and you will make very bad decisions. And it's not easy to do that. It's always the same risk that you want to keep informed. You are going to absorb inevitably some wrong information, deceptive information, but you have to keep a cool head. Otherwise, you will continue to become excessively stressed in a way which is unproductive and completely unnecessary.
I see folks all the time who get wrapped up in what's being said on quote-unquote the news every day, And every day seems like there's another scandal and another smoking gun and another outrage. And I'll have folks come to me asking for comment on it. And I'll say, you know, I really haven't had time to look into it yet. So I don't want to say anything because I'm not sure I have all the facts. In many cases, in fact, I would say most cases, that's my way of avoiding the issue. And it, actually, the words I use have a factual basis to them, because the way the news is shared with us today is designed to keep people anxious. It's meant to keep them on edge. It's meant to addict them to waiting for the next news cycle or the next report, so that they'll just sit in front of their TV or keep refreshing on social media hour after hour after hour. And in many cases, they're just going to basically keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again for hours and hours and hours. Now, by the time that that story, that breaking news, has time to settle and we discover all the facts and we get the full picture, they've already moved on to the next outrage. And when you want to have a rational conversation about, you know, here are the facts and here what really happened, people say, oh, that's old news, I've already moved on. Or they'll call upon you to say, are you, did you just see what was on the news? Can you believe that? And as a man who believes X, can you possibly, it's like you can't let that happen, because really that's just somebody else setting your agenda for you. And to me, that's a form of disruption that a lot of us can do without. That's just me.
Certainly, and there are good examples from history about how to deal with that. One of the biographies I present in the book is the story of Rubens, was a famous painter in the 17th century.
Yeah.
And Rubens has to live in a period of history that was really horrible. I mean, there was continuous wars in Europe. There were many people starving, thousands of people having to move from one country to the other due to religious persecution. It was really a very bad period in history. But Rubens made a fortune. I mean, he became really a millionaire. He had still his house. You can see, visit his house in the middle of Antwerp in Belgium. And how did he do it? How did he become so successful in such a horrible period? And he did it in a very simple way. The guy, I don't think he was really a super, super genius painter, but he was very good at systems. He realized that most painters were starving, and he looked around in Antwerp and said, okay, there's no future here. If I do what everybody else is doing, I'm going to starve. So what he did is to copy. He figured out which painters were successful in Europe and were making a lot of money. He went to Italy for a few months to learn from the very successful painters, very wealthy. He copied their techniques, went back to Antwerp in Belgium, and basically he imitated what the Italians were doing. He copied their marketing system, which consisted basically of making sketches and going around rich people, showing them sketches and say, do you want me to make a portrait of your family? Do you want me to make a painting of your house? And Rubens was always going around with a sketchbook under his arm, going to parties, going to dinners. And he accumulated a huge amount of clients. And then he hired people to produce these paintings. And within a few years, he made a huge fortune. While all his peers, other painters in the era, most of them were starving. And this is a great lesson from history. Even when the society seems to be falling apart, there are still people doing very well. There are still people able to deal with disruptions. All you need to do is to copy what they are doing. You don't need to despair. You don't need to get depressed. You don't need to give up. Just look at what people are doing, people, successful people, in different periods of history, people like Rubens. Rubens built a machine. He actually built a machine to produce a work of arts very quickly, very inexpensively, and he created such a beautiful marketing system that it has gone through the centuries as one of the most successful painters in history, while he was not particularly talented, but he copied the system to really survive in times of disruption.
Yeah, that's now you've made a point before, and I love that you cover this in this book as well, is why are you so skeptical about going back to nature as a recipe for happiness? First of all, tell us what you mean by going back to nature, and then explain to us what your skepticism is about that.
Well, going back to nature is one of the fashions of the 21st century, and you see all kind of courses of meditation and going to these retreats in the middle of nowhere where people are going to sit on the ground and meditate. I mean, this kind of stuff. This is a great fashion already since the 1960s. It has become increasingly bigger and bigger. I think in our century, this is a great market, a growing market, but this, I think, is very deceptive, that people that go into this kind of retreats, this kind of escapes from reality, escape for technology, and they go for a couple of weeks to the countryside and they think, oh, I've become a new person. Most of the time is not going to solve any problem. By isolating yourself from reality, from your business, from your family, from your friends, you get a very disrupted, a very unreal vision of the world that is not going to solve any problem. It is, I think it's very deceptive, and people should not fall for this kind of ideologies, this kind of naive representations of the world, because we live in the 21st century. We benefit from technology. We benefit from opportunity, and you are not going to find a better life by going to live in the wilderness, which actually is very unkind to human beings.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, we've already covered, I think, some of this, but I think you may have a few other things, which is why we wanted to go over this, is, you know, what are some of the factors you feel are making people particularly vulnerable today?
Yeah, the short-term orientation you see in all these get-rich-quick schemes, you see all these promises that, okay, they work in 5 hours per week and this kind of stuff. This has become, in the last decade, it has gone to an extreme level. I mean, we have become so short-term oriented that this become ridiculous. I mean, you cannot run a business now without having a consultant coming to you and tell, oh, I can improve your results in 24 hours and you can make millions and millions. I mean, this kind of nonsense.
Right.
You see this all the time. This makes people super vulnerable because it makes people very unrealistic. I mean, this is not the way to build a business, not the way to build your life. And you have to realize that there is a huge marketing incentive for people to sell you this kind of stuff, but it never works. It's just an illusion.
You made me think of something here, my friend. I have been in this industry for 16 years. I have seen people and things come and go and come and go again. I remember when there were people whose names were hot and you heard about them all the time, and this is the person everybody was supposed to emulate in the industry, and I've seen them disappear. I've seen them go into different industries. I've seen them retire. I've seen them die, and there are some that I've seen do so well that they don't even really need to promote or market themselves anymore because they've established what they need in life, and they've developed wealth, and they've developed security, and they've developed strong defenses against the possibility of being disrupted. Let me give you an example of a trend I've seen a couple times. Is, you know, you refer to get rich quick schemes, and then people see this marketing and say, oh, just invest in our program for $29 a month and you'll make $1 million, or just do this one thing with your Facebook ads and you'll be a 5x millionaire by Tuesday, right? So you see all these things and you say, okay, that's BS, and people spend thousands and thousands of dollars because they want to believe in it. But then you see these folks who, it seems like every other week, literally every 2 weeks, they are investing in a new business opportunity. And then they'll introduce it, they'll do a webinar around it, they'll invite their friends to join. And then a few days later, they start posting screenshots and say, hey, look, I made $85 today. And you look at these folks and you say, wait a minute, what the heck is this? They say that they have this business and they're only spending 30 minutes a day on it and they made $85 today. Well, what the heck is that? I mean, they're not doing anything. Well, here's why those people will often succeed, in my opinion. is because, yeah, they have these little businesses they have to only spend 15, 20 minutes a day on. And once they get them up and running, get them optimized, they make about $100 a day. But you can easily have 20 businesses like that. So take that $100 and multiply it by 20. Now you're making $2,000 a day. $2,000 a day. Let me just do some quick math here. 2,000 times 365 is, oh no, 2,000, not 200. 1 second. Let me do this right. 2,000 times 365, 730,000. That's a pretty decent amount of money to live on. 730,000 also gives you the opportunity to invest it, put it to work for you, and turn it into a lot more money. So what folks miss is, yeah, they move on from one business to the next, but they don't quit the businesses as they go. They keep adding new ones. And because they're so diversified, they have a level of protection against disruption, because if one of those 20 businesses fails, they still have 19 more. That's just my view.
Yeah, indeed. You can make a business out of little enterprises, but I would not really trust all these promises. Right. It is for most people, it's not the way to go. I mean, you right. have to build your skills little by little. Sometimes it takes a decade to build your reputation, to build your business. This is the way to go. It has been always the same path in history. You see people being able to learn from a failure, but they have been building their skills little by little. There is no magic. I have not found a single example of people just like this entering a new business, becoming super right. successful within a week. It's pure fantasy. It never right. happens. And when you see this kind of stories, they don't tell you that this person has been trying different opportunities, different businesses True. In the same area for 10 years.
True. Yeah, there's always the 10 years of blood, sweat, and tears behind those overnight success stories. And I don't think all these things automatically succeed. The point that I was getting at, actually, is you see they introduce these opportunities that they get involved in, and they're showing their screenshots to prove they're making $85 or $100 a day. And the thing is that's believable, because you can see making a small time and money investment, getting a small return on it that is still profitable. You add a bunch of those stuff up, and now you have multiple streams of income. It's not for everybody. In fact, it's not for most people. I'm just making the point that these are not people going out saying, oh yeah, just, you know, give 30 minutes a day and $27 and you'll be living on Easy Street in 30 days because you'll get 900% return on investment. And that is a bunch of bullocks. But if I see them making $85 a day, I'll believe it. Doesn't mean I'll do it, but I'll believe it.
Yeah, possibly. But for most people, it's not really a good use of their time. Huh? Right. If you spend these days building your skills, your business in an area where you have a future and yeah. you can really grow, over time, you will do much, much better.
Yeah, and I think for about 99% of us, that is absolutely true. I'm just saying that there are folks out there who can deal with that level of diversity. I think it takes a certain skill set, a certain mindset, and a certain personality that 99% of the world just doesn't have. And that's you got to have a lot of dogged determination. You got to have a lot of stick-to-itiveness, and you got to be prepared for a fair amount of disruption on your way there. I would say for myself is if you want to get investing in those types of multiple streams of income, I would first do as you said, develop a certain skill or a set of skills, make that into a profitable, lucrative, scalable, sellable business, and then use some of your returns on that to add multiple streams of income as a way of, for, you know, relatively small investment and not too much more time, to making yourself less disruptible. There's different ways of looking at it. I just thought we could go back and forth in here for a couple minutes just to show people that there are different ways of looking at things, and also to address the credibility issue a little bit, which I thought was pretty important. Now, there's something else that you were sharing with me in the green room here that I am just, you know, dying for you to share with our audience. And it's this thing called the myth of the inception point, I-N-C-E-P-T-I-O-N, the myth of the inception point. Now, what does that mean?
This is something that I have detected in many stories, that when people go through disruptions They have problems with their business, with their health. They always develop, this is, I think, natural in human beings. They develop this fantasy that everything was fine until I had this inception point where my life changed for the worse. And I was just doing very well and then just got cancer and my whole life was destroyed. Or my business was doing very well and then I got this problem with this employee and then I was sued and then I lost everything. And you get this fantasy that, everything was fine until I have this point, this inception point where the catastrophe starts. And this is a fantasy which is very natural for human beings to believe that everything is fine until something, some little thing happens and then everything is destroyed. But when you look into the details, you see it's just a fantasy. It doesn't happen like this. And I've gone in the book, I've gone through many different cases of people who destroy, and there is always a vulnerability pre-existing in the story that people have been running their businesses very carelessly. They have been abusing their health. They have been eating very bad diets. And this makes people vulnerable. And then, one day you get a heart attack, you get cancer, you get bankruptcy, you get litigation. But there is no inception point. It's a trend. And it takes, very often it takes years. It takes years to build this strength. And people become increasingly vulnerable. They don't realize that. And then they have this fantasy of the inception point and say, my God, I got a heart attack. I wasn't expecting this. And they don't tell you they've been eating crap for 30 years.
Right.
So you have to get out of this fantasy because it's super dangerous. You have to look at the background story. And when you look at the whole picture, you see that this vulnerability was built through decades.
Yeah, that's very true. And what you also reveal to us is the importance of, the importance of why we need to dig a little bit deeper. And one of the things that I am very familiar with, and this is inside studies, when you look at statistical process control and when you look at fact finding, is when somebody tells you something, ask why 5 times. So they say, I had a heart attack. Why? I guess I had some coronary issues, some heart disease. Why? Maybe it's because of how I was eating. Why? Well, I thought I could live forever and I just wasn't paying attention to my diet. And I think people tried to warn me, but I just didn't listen because I thought I was invincible. Why? You see where I'm going? You keep asking why, and once you get through the 5 whys, they say that once you ask it 5 times, you can get to the core set of facts that drive the truth behind what happened.
Indeed, and it's very unnatural for human beings to ask these sort of questions. We tend to believe too easily that it just happened out of the blue, and people go bankrupt, people get a heart attack, they lose their jobs. Losing their jobs, which is something that happens to millions of people every year, is not in itself a big problem. If you have been building your skills and you have been building a network and you have been saving money, it is a disruption that might create some minor damage for a few months, but you will recover very quickly. What happens with people that lose their jobs and they find themselves completely lost because they have no skills, they have no network, they have no no profession because they didn't learn anything. This is the real problem. This has nothing to do with losing your job. This is a precondition of vulnerability that you have allowed to happen to yourself by inaction through the years, through the decades. So you have to realize that when you put problems in perspective and you look at the whole story, the lesson is always the same. You have to build your strengths. You have to build your skills. You have to build your relationship. You have to build your assets over time. Because if you have the idea that everything's going to be fine, you are making yourself vulnerable. It's not necessary to think like this. And there are no exceptions in history. People who are wiped out by disruption are people who are totally unprepared.
Yeah, and when you look at history, once you get used to the patterns and how things tend to be, you can almost read the story and you can see it coming. After a while, you get to the point where you can watch any movie or television show or read any book, and just as you're reading along, you can kind of predict what's going to happen next. You can see where the tragedy is going to happen or where the change is going to happen. You know, I think about this is, I know a lot of people at this point in my life who have, if you want to go back to heart attacks for a second, and, you know, with only one exception, and I think this is maybe because I just didn't, you know certain things about the person. In every single case where the person had a heart attack, when it happened and I heard about it, I wasn't surprised. Even if up until that time, when I heard they had the heart attack, it wasn't exactly on my radar screen, oh, this person's doing thing that's going to lead them to a coronary. When I heard about the heart attack, it's like, yeah, I saw that coming. It's kind of a retrospective thing, but yep. Because there's a matter of preparation, there's a matter of how you live your life, and a matter of how you do things. And if you don't have a forward-looking view, yeah, you can get disrupted by things that you probably could have seen coming.
Yes, and all of us need a backup plan. I encourage people to invest money in different countries to learn new skills. If you can, learn the second language, especially if you are in the U.S. It's so easy for Americans to learn Spanish. I mean, you can pick it up in most cities in the U.S. It will open your business opportunities. It will enrich your personality by opening your friendships. And these kind of things take 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day. Yeah. You can learn it in your car, and it can really make you very resilient to adversity, to disruptions, because you have more skills than your neighbor.
I think there's a problem. I mean, if we want to spend just a couple minutes on this, we have about 7 minutes left in the interview, but since you brought it up, let's get into it just for just a second. Because, you're in Europe and I'm here in the United States, and so you have sort of an outward-looking in view of what goes on in my country, and I have an inward-looking in view. Now, we have folks here who say, why is it that every time I call tech support, I have to press 1 for English? Isn't this an English-speaking country? Now, I agree that for a country to function effectively, they should have an official language. And the United States, our official language is English. I agree with that. I certainly do. I also suggest people look at history. Because if you go back to the founding of our country, right around the time we were becoming the United States, we had such a large percentage of our population that spoke German that there was a debate over whether German should be our official language. Kind of lost to history. But when you look at how these things kind of come about, and it could have even been argued since the United States had just achieved its independence from Great Britain, which spoke English, it would have made sense that maybe we decide we were going to speak a little different language just to be different. So you want to hold on to your English and see that as, well, it has to be English. Okay, that's fine. Your country has an official language. Totally down with that. But when you learn different languages, you have the opportunity to see things through different sets of eyes, and it also gives you more adaptability in the marketplace and in your ability to travel around the world. I would also mention that, unfortunately, what we see in our country here, and again, this is my inside looking in, is I took 3 years of Spanish in secondary school and 2 semesters of Spanish in college. And pretty much other than swear words, the only Spanish I really know is how to say, thank you, sir, for the shoes for my children. That's really about the extent of my ability to speak Spanish. And here's where I think the problem is. You know, you're taught your basic grammar and reciting words and how to do conjugations and the difference between nosotros and all that. But you don't really get a chance to immerse in it. I was never told you have to read this short story in Spanish and translate it. You have to read this story and then explain to us in Spanish what it means to you. So you never got that immersion. go there and find your way around. And, oh, and you can't ask them if they speak English. You have to speak Spanish. So without the immersion, it never really becomes part of us. Now, as you pointed out, science and technology have given us the ability to develop educational systems where the design of the education creates an immersion. So yeah, if you have a 15-minute drive, you pop in your tape and you do 15 minutes of Spanish training. And if you want to practice your Spanish, all you have to do is find a chat room online somewhere where people are speaking Spanish and dive in. Before you know it, you'll be pretty good at Spanish. But it's just the fact that people aren't willing to take that step of saying, hey, you know what? There's nothing wrong with English being our official language, and I support that. But at the same time, I'd like to learn Spanish because that's going to open up a world of opportunities for me. And I think it's that mindset transition, because what happens if you end up in a country where they speak Spanish and you have to live there, or you get to live there? Maybe you fall in love with somebody from Colombia and you decide to go live there with them. Aren't you going to be better off if you already speak the language?
Certainly. The opportunities that a new language will open, unless you experience it yourself, is difficult to imagine. I mean, Europe is made of very small countries. Most countries you can drive in 5 hours from end to end.
True.
So for us, it's no choice. I mean, we have to speak several languages. Otherwise, the business opportunities are very limited. And when you're American, everything seems far away because your country is so huge. But I tell you, if you can learn Spanish, if you can learn French, if you can learn Chinese, it will open your business opportunities. It will open your personal opportunities. They will be multiplied by 1,000. And it's so easy, so inexpensive. And you have to forget about school, because the way they present language learning is very boring. Unappealing. But if you just start reading simple books, you start listening to tapes. I mean, it takes 15 minutes a day. And the wealth of opportunities you can get is really impressive.
Very good. So we're actually near the top of our time here. And actually, we have about 2 minutes left. I want to give one of these minutes to you. Your new book, Undisrupted, how can we get it?
It's very, very easy to get. You just type my name, John Vespasian, on Google. You will find my books. You will find my free newsletter. You'll find my blog. Just type John Vespasian on any search engine on Google, and you will find it in 1 second.
Well, we know that for a fact, because I've looked you up a bunch of times. So again, the name of the book is Undisrupted. The author is John Vespasian, our guest here today. Let me spell his name for you in case you're listening to this while you're driving. Its last name is Vespasian. It's a very common Armenian name, and his first name is John. So John Vespasian, thank you so much for once again gracing us with your presence here at the Business Creators Radio Show. And it's been an honor, and as always, with you in education.
Many thanks, Adam.
All right, for everybody listening, this is Adam Homey, host of the Business Creators Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our previous and our upcoming episodes at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite syndication network and tune in every week where we help you win at the game of business and marketing so you thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.